Hello, everyone. This is Dark Journalist with an important discussion with former Assistant HUD Secretary and Wall Street Dylan Reed and Company partner, Catherine Austin Fitz. Today, Catherine will outline the going direct reset and dive deep on the forces who are attempting to control every aspect of society with surveillance, DNA tracking, and transhumanism. She sees this as a time for choosing freedom versus tyranny, and how we must support those on the front lines fighting the battle for freedom. Catherine, I wanted to start off with your old boss at HUD, Jack Kemp.
I like that you sensed that he was being blackmailed. I thought that was a particularly powerful scene.
So it was funny. Kemp really wanted to be successful politically, but he also really wanted to get important things done. And the problem is your political ambition is directly in conflict with a model that you don't think is right. So Kemp really wanted to end poverty and understood that the system didn't want that and felt a lot of tension about it. So, but he was somebody who chose to implement corruption if that would get him higher. And it was, you know, it was kind of sad to watch him be blackmailed. So I tell the story in one of the posts I have of him being blackmailed. And I've never seen Daniel. It really touched me because I've seen people facing death, you know, many times. And I've never seen anybody as afraid as Jack Kemp was when he was being blackmailed. It was horrible to watch his fear.
Incredible.
Well, because if you're blackmailed for what I suspect he was blackmailed for, you're not just going to lose your job. You're going to lose your family. You're going to lose your friends. You're going to lose your brand. You're going to lose your reputation. You're going to lose everything.
And that's the dirty inner core. That idea, it's interesting, of control files, I think people understand a lot better in the digital age because it's so easy to obtain them. And we see this over and over again.
Well, but think about this. I spent 11 years and $6 million proving that what they said about me was false. And what was amazing is right after I finished proving it, and it was amazing to watch the court unfold, I walked into the last trial, and they were then required to put on, you know, they were required to back up all of these allegations that they've been making for years and years and years. And they had absolutely nothing. It was an amazing thing to watch because everybody was fighting with each other because nobody wanted to have to like stand up and admit. And my attorney, who was hugely overprepared because he had prepared this trial three times and had been canceled. So he prepares and it's canceled the night before. That's how they try and force you to settle. So, you know, and I would drive him crazy because I say, no, I won't settle. You know, and so we'd prepare again and then they cancel again. So finally they had to go and so he come to court and this is the most overprepared case in the history of stupid QI-tam civil litigation. And the other side basically presents their case and they have nothing. They have no evidence. They have nothing. And my attorney at the end of the first day, he's white as a sheet. He turns to me and he said, oh my God, they have absolutely nothing.
Wow.
I said, I've been telling you that for 7 years. He said, I didn't believe it. I didn't believe this whole thing could be a complete bluff. Okay, so we go through this trial and it finishes, at which point I have proved beyond a shadow of a doubt that these gumbos have absolutely nothing. In fact, on the last day of the trial, this was one of the great scenes. So, you know, the attorney spent the whole thing in shock. But the attorney from the Department of Justice, the attorney from the whistleblower, and the attorney from HUD started to fight in an open courtroom in front of us.
Wow.
So they're all on the other side. And one guy finally turns to another. He says, and just yelling at each other in open court. And the judge is just sitting looking at it, amazing, because he's hoping they can rig it because he doesn't want to have to rig it.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So one says, you don't know that's true. And he says, yes, I do. I have a document signed by Fitz saying it's true. And then they said, oh, well, then it must be true. And my lawyer looked at me and he said, "You're the only one they believe."
Right.
I said, "So now, okay, so then it's over." And I go back to Hickory Valley, Tennessee. And I won't bore you with the details of what happens next. You know, time goes by. We end up settling. You know, I get essentially almost all the money back minus the legal fees. And because remember, this is a giant bill collection, at which point I won't bore you with the details. People start pushing rumors. Oh, you know, she really was guilty, but they couldn't say in trial what it really was. Blah, blah, blah. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And that's when I realized the central bankers have to have me be wrong, because I'm running around saying, you know, that they're stealing money out the back door, which they were.
Uh-huh.
And now we know it's 21 trillion. Then it was only 4 or 5 trillion. Now it's 21 trillion and rising.
Right.
So what I discovered was is they have to have, I have to be wrong no matter what.
Right.
And no science and no facts and no math and no finances and no financial statements and no budgets and no anything can prove that I'm right, because as a policy matter, I must be wrong. And they are willing to print an infinite amount of money to make sure I'm wrong.
Incredible.
So if you'll say I'm wrong, they'll pay you lots of money.
You know, John Potash, there was a documentary I watched of his recently, and he grabbed a clip of yours from an Aaron Russo special where you're talking about 9/11 and central bank stuff. And it's interesting because I was thinking, you know,
it was the 20th anniversary this past September, and there's still no good official answers for what took place.
But 9/11 unleashed so much of the things that we're seeing now, and the whole emergency powers that we're still living under, which is something that Professor Scott is always pointing to and saying, well, regardless if the president was Obama, Bush, or Trump, they all signed the Emergency Powers Act. Do we ever get out of that shadow of 9/11 20 years after?
So I'm going to give you a long-winded answer. I once had a workshop where I asked people to build a timeline 2,000 years forward and 2,000 years back. And what I discovered as a practical matter, they couldn't do it. And the reason they couldn't do it was because they were stuck on certain events which had become energetically captured by lies. They had a psychological need to clear these events before they could dream up a 2,000-year future. They were stuck. It was very, very interesting. And they were stuck because how can you build with integrity if you believe there is no integrity?
Right.
It's like they were searching for a way to find integrity and build a platform of integrity with which to go forward, is my guess as to what was really going on. So I think there is a tremendous need on the Kennedy assassination and 9/11 to face facts. Now, one of the things, I think you've read my article, Meditations on the Crossroads.
Yes.
Where I talk about my mother's assassination. Oh, yeah. And one of the things I say at the end of it is, you know, all these different things, whether it's narcotics trafficking or 9/11 or the Kennedy assassination, all these things were done or permitted by or covered up by people. And I think the time has come, you know, divide knowledge between who and what we need. We've been talking about what we need to talk about who.
Right.
Who's doing this? Why are they doing this? You know, why is Jay Powell walking into a room and voting to put 500 million people out of work?
Right.
Why is Jay Powell running an operation that's infusing massive amounts of money into Wall Street, who are then, you know, cleaning people out around America while their businesses are shut down by a phony baloney healthcare fraud? You know, so the going direct reset is using the injection fraud. Did you get our injection fraud wrap up?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So why is someone like Jay Powell doing that?
This is the question.
Right. And it's a question for one of us because we're all doing it. You know, why are we putting our money in digital assets created out of thin air when 54 to 70% of the children in our society have chronic disease and are being poisoned to death?
Yeah, right.
Can you imagine landing in a spaceship, coming up to a little village and discovering, you know, that all the elders of the community are trading digital assets while their children are poisoning and dying? What?
Yeah, it's bizarre. It's a bizarre state of affairs.
Right. And I don't know, you know.
You know, I was thinking of coming clean. You mentioned that before. I interviewed John Warner, Senator Warner's son, who is a Mellon. And I did a two-part interview with him. And he tried to come clean on the Mellon banking family and the various things that they had done, but also that Chris Mellon was his cousin who was pushing this whole UFO threat thing. And I was thinking, you know, we need so much more of that.
Of
people coming clean on his level, you know.
Well, did you ever know my sort of fantasy? I haven't figured out how I could do this operationally.
Okay.
But one of my dreams has always been to run a good housekeeping committee where people come in, confess their sins, negotiate a restitution, and then get the good housekeeping seal of approval and can change sides to, you know, the pro-freedom side.
That's great.
Yeah. And so we say, whatever they accuse this guy of, you know, whatever was in their control file. In other words, you're trying to relieve people of their control files.
Wow.
That's my dream, is to find a way to say, okay, everybody wants to be freed of their control file, is willing to join the pro-freedom team, you know, the pro-decentralization team. Let's give you a process by which you can, you know, get out of your prison. I'll tell you, some of the unhappiest people I've ever seen are people who retire after spending a whole lifetime playing the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and finally, either in their later years or after they've retired, they realize what they've been a part of. Because a lot of times they don't see the whole thing whole. And then, you know, then it's too late. And it's this, what you said before, they've been hollowed out. It's horrible to watch. And they feel, you know, they feel like there's no way to be redeemed. And I disagree. I think everybody, you know, redemption is possible for all of us. And forgiveness is possible for all of us. And if society is going to have a positive pathway forward, we're going to have to do this one person at a time. So, you know, I'm a great believer that, you know, people can be composted too, in a positive way, not just by injecting them.
Right, exactly. Right. Wow. Right. Yeah, that's incredible.
So, right. Because I, you know, people are always saying, oh, the guys in the establishment are corrupt. Boy, I've lived all over the world, and I got to tell you, I found as much corruption at the bottom as I did at the top.
Excellent observation. Yeah.
Yeah.
that's right on point. The Biden administration, I know that you're working and focusing on more of a local level, and you always have emphasized that people should pay attention to that level. Nonetheless, unusual administration, to say the least. What are your impressions just across the board about what's happening there?
You know, I've when I do money markets up, you know, I'll dip in and watch what the administration is doing. And I feel like I'm watching a science fiction story. So you saw the picture of Biden kneeling to the Israeli. They said it was the Israeli chief of staff, but if you look at the picture, he's kneeling to the prime minister.
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
Yes.
Now, the problem, well, it's strange that he did it, but then it's strange that they let the picture out.
Yes.
I mean, don't think that the security around the president can't stop that.
Sure.
Right. So, you know, you look at that and you say, that is so bizarre. I have one friend who's always saying it's bizarro world. You know, when you get reports, the civil service is basically not allowed to come back to work and being stripped of their data and their access and their support. So it really does look like they're trying to, you know, move the operation out to whatever the, you know, the new global governance system is. So the question is there really an administration?
Right.
You know, because it's so controlled by the banks and the corporate, you know, both the defense contractors and the tech firms, you know, there's no government. There is no government. It's like a movie.
Yeah.
So what was the other strange one? Of course, there was the BLM flags running on American embassies around the world. That was great for the brand. What was the other one that was so shocking? There were a couple more. I'd have to go back. You know, I have a great ability to like forget these things because they're so depressing. So I immediately. But somebody said the other day that what they're doing to Biden is elder abuse, and I kind of feel, you know, that whatever I'm watching is it's abusive, and no one should do that to a human being.
I've never seen a presidency like it where, you know, if you really go back, I can't think of any situation except maybe Ford where there was somebody who was just placed in there and they're just befuddled. But I mean, but Biden is much further gone than Ford. So I really strain to find an example that works. But Biden seems like he could mentally implode at any moment. He does not seem to be in possession of his faculties, which is pretty scary when you think about it.
Well, but here's the question. I mean, is the reason Biden's there and doing what he's doing to help dismember, you know, if you're trying to disconnect the nuclear football, the military, the taxation, if you're trying to argue for global governance, it helps you to build support by getting people to believe that the U.S. infrastructure is hopelessly incompetent.
Right.
So I'm assuming this is all part of taking the Band-Aid off. You know, in other words, they're trying to get the U.S. infrastructure and field to let go of the nuclear football, let go of the military, let go of the taxation, let go of the civil service. You know, you're trying, it's like pulling the plug out on a move. And I think this is just part of destroying the brand.
That was the whole kind of rape of Russia thing where you said they're privatizing the assets of the United States.
Well, it you know, I'm guessing, but it looks to me like they're putting together the argument for a global government and they're trying to destroy the government infrastructure so that people give up, you know, on trying to stop that from happening. But the other thing you're seeing is a clear effort to sort of dismember the states into different groups or even pull. I mean, I think you're looking at a wholesale pulling apart of the United States, or uh-huh. We may be.
Right.
I mean, think about it. If you've stolen $21 trillion and the debt's there, but the money's gone, wouldn't it be better to have the states pull the thing apart? Because then you can say, well, it wasn't our fault. You don't get Social Security. That's what you wanted. You wanted to leave.
Right.
Right?
It's an option that they have. And they've been building, and they were really pushing that Civil War thing as a theme for a while. They talk more about going after domestic terrorists now, that is anyone who opposes them, pretty much.
Well, here's the thing. The Civil War didn't work, and I don't think the domestic terrorism will work either. And the reason I don't think it will work, you know, there is something, you know, I just have to tell you, I can't tell you how much I love the American people. It's amazing that they have, you know, that they're still walking and standing after everything they've been through. But,
yeah,
you know, the number of highly responsible, highly capable people in America who operate on faith and try and do the right thing, it's still an enormous critical mass of people, no matter how what they've been through or the pressure they're under. And they understand what it takes to make the world work, whether it's economically or in terms of government, you know, and they care about real stuff. They care about, you know, fixing the potholes on the roads. They care about building bridges, and they watch all of this stuff. And at some point they, in their own quiet, sometimes passive aggressive way, just say, okay, we don't care about you anymore. You know, we don't have time. They don't have time for domestic terrorism. They're they have real problems, and they're dealing with real stuff. Uh-huh. And they know you just create problems and you don't deal with real stuff. So I just think, you know, we're looking at a situation where people are going to have false flags and no one's going to show up. In other words, you can't have a successful false flag if no one will play along or believe it.
Right.
You know, it's there's no audience anymore for a lot of this stuff.
Exactly. Interesting. They need a new playbook.
You know, I think they have bet the ranch that mind control can get them across the goal line. Mm-hmm. And that's really the question. Can they, you know, can mind control do what they need? I don't believe it can, but, you know, I don't begin to understand the technology and what they've got up their sleeve. But we'll see.
And the CIA UFO disclosures are probably part of that.
You know, I'm guessing, but I think if I were the CIA, the reason I would do that is to say, you know, we need a global governance structure because we're dealing with a global problem. And, you know, this can't be handled by national governments. And, you know, we need the military to respond globally.
Right. A lot of those leaders, like Boris Johnson, for example, it's like Invasion of the Body Snatchers. They start out as one person and then they become kind of like the COVID dictator.
Well, it gets back to, you know, there is no national sovereignty. So I go back to the guy in Canada who said, thank you for sending the rain.
Wow.
If you run a province in Canada and you're basically a hostage of weather warfare and they can shut off your rain and destroy your farmers, you know, and they're running around Africa, assassinating African leaders and assassinating the Haitian president. What are you going to do? I mean, it was very interesting. I told you this three times. I've tried to publish Dylan Reed in the Aristocracy of Stock Profits. And the last time I tried to publish it, the third time, they threatened somebody in my family. And the threat was delivered by a combination of three people. And it was only when you heard them all together that you realized, oh, you know, it was very elegantly and very carefully done. And I believe that there was a very good chance that they were sincere. And so I completely backed down. I didn't publish it. Now, my feeling is it's already public. If you want to read it, you can. But I also believe that I was not willing to run the risk that they were going to kill somebody. You know, it's scary when it happens because you realize they absolutely have the power to do it. They can do it. And, you know, you're not willing to do that to somebody you care about.
Right. Right. Absolutely. Now, the book is incredible, and it's such an education. In fact, I think if you're operating in this environment today and you haven't read that book, you're missing such a vital piece of how the structure was set up. It's kind of like a missing puzzle piece in looking
at it. So I wrote it like a case study for business school to help people understand how the model worked. And also to help people how they had been tricked. Because the hard thing for many people to understand is, you know, the hard part of facing I'm a patsy is how come, you know, I care, I read, I study, I'm smart. How could I get that tricked? And you have to see, you have to understand how the model works, understand how you know, this is all going on and you didn't notice. And so it was written as a case study for business school. Actually, because of what happened, you know, we have all the legal documents. You could even use it as a case study. I'd love to write a case study for a law school to use it because it's a
wow.
It's a primer in how to manipulate civil procedures to, you know, engage in criminal enterprise.
incredible. Yeah, it's remarkable. And your own biography runs through it as well, which is interesting because, you know, it's like your own firsthand experiences, which I think is a little bit different than what we typically get with books like this, which are analysis from the outside very often.
Well, that's because I, you know, one of the reasons I went to HUD was I wanted to get place-based data so that I could see, I could map out what was going on in the economy. And then when the litigation happened, I decided, okay, you know, I'd never wanted to look on the covert side, but then I had to map out the covert side. And I think the way to understand the covert side is to see it in your own life and history. I went back when I was traveling around the country talking, you know, I was driving around the country talking and seeing all my relatives, including people I'd really never met or got to know. And it was funny because I downloaded all the history and information from all these older relatives, and then they all died. And I realized, oh, you know, I just downloaded this precious history. And one of the things I discovered after going through history after history is I realized, you know, these people have been harvested for generations and they don't see it. Hmm. We think, oh, that happened to me, my accidents, or this was a coincidence, you know, and we don't see the game. And so part of the reason I wrote Dylan Reed is, you know, we have to see the game. If we can see the game, then we can get into the game as a player and start to change the game.
Right.
Exactly. So that's what I say to everybody. Yes, you know, there is a going direct reset. You know, so the establishment is doing a reset. But the reality is there needs to be a reset. So where's our reset?
Right.
You know, let's put a better reset on the table, you know, because we can't.
Well, that's fascinating because you said when they fail, we're going to need something else in place to pick up in the rubble, kind of like post-war Germany. When you go over those films of the ruins, the thing is blown out.
Right.
That's the kind of failure that they could have, and we'd be stuck picking that up.
Right.
So we should be ready.
I wouldn't wait. I think we just, you know, because this is an experiment. It is a prototype. They're making it up as they go. And I think we should just get in there and start inventing. Right?
Right. Absolutely. Wow.
Right.
Incredible. And they can start with this report. Actually, there's so much in here, actually, that I know I'm going to be spending a lot more time with it. But
well, the thing I love about this report, I don't know if you saw my discussion with Titus about it, but I said, you know, this proves beyond a shadow of a doubt that it wasn't a downturn. It was a takedown.
Ah.
This was a takedown. And Titus proves it. This was a takedown. They went in and they voted, and they voted to take down the economy.
Remarkable.
Right.
It's remarkable.
And think about it. Yeah, Jackson Hole, Wyoming. So think about it. They voted to take down the economy, and now 34% of the small businesses in America are shut down, and 60% of the African-American businesses are shut down.
Wow.
Yeah, so take that BLM and stuff it.
Right. Well, the leader of BLM went and bought those four houses there in this ritzy L.A. neighborhood, you know.
Well, you know, covering up genocide pays well.
Wow. True. Remarkable. Catherine, we have this report. We have the one that's coming out.
That's coming out next is the Take Action.
Yeah.
So that's the one with all the forms and tools. And, you know, so we decided in the first quarter, you know, the army's on the ground. It's parents and employees, you know, fighting on the ground and, you know, or going to the school board and fighting on the ground. So we need to get tools into people's hands. But ultimately, we're going to have to take back the money creation. So we built the silver and gold calculator. So, you know, first quarter was sort of Leonardo da Vinci tool making time. And then now we're doing CBDCs. So
fantastic.
Yeah. So
we have to learn how to support our army.
Right. Exactly. So support our army a lot in the first quarter wrap up will help you. And then this one on CBDCs will help you understand how they're going to throw the trap. And, you know, all I can say is go to Soleri.com. And the first thing you ought to do is go watch that video. Click on Cash Friday. Click on Cash Friday. It's up in the right-hand corner. watch Carstens explain to you, we will have complete control.
Our analysis on CBDC, in particular for the use of general, to the general use, we tend to establish the equivalence with cash. And there is a huge difference there. For example, in cash, we don't know, for example, who's using a $100 bill today. We don't know who is using a 1,000 peso bill today. A key difference in with the CBDC is that central bank will have absolute control on the rules and regulations that will determine the use of that expression of central bank liability. And also, we will have the technology to enforce that. Those two issues are extremely important, and that makes a huge difference with respect to what cash is.
So, if you're not supposed to go more than 5 miles from your home, guess what? Your money won't work more than 5 miles from home. If you're not supposed to buy pizza, guess what? Your money won't work buying pizza. So, Carstens will explain to you in 56 seconds, but then use cash on Friday.
Cash Fridays. We can make that huge. We have the ability to make that huge.
I would make it huge. Now, believe it or not, you know who came up with that? So I was sitting in Switzerland in Basel, where the Bank of International Settlements were, and I was meeting with the Children's Health Defense team.
Oh, hey.
Kennedy's group. Yeah. And Mary Holland is the vice chairman, who's an absolute genius. She's a brilliant attorney. And we're sitting there talking about, okay, passports and the CBDCs and the universal basic income. How do we stop these guys from getting complete digital control? So it's talking about the importance of getting, you know, the use cash usage up. And Mary says, well, what about Cash Friday? Why don't we do a Cash Friday?
Fantastic.
Brilliant. Yeah. So it didn't come from me. It came from the lawyers, okay. The smart lawyers. Yeah.
Well, listen, it's in that network. It's a fantastic idea. And I think we can push that out. I should ask you for 2 minutes on the vaccine passport because I didn't really get into it. Obviously, again, you have that sort of slavery tracking surveillance system and how easily that can be turned into something else. What do you see?
Well, I don't think it's going to turn into something else. I think it starts off as that something else. You don't call it that.
Yeah.
Right.
Where are they going with the vaccine passport?
So I think they're looking to do transactional control, including spatial control.
Yeah.
So
I was thinking of it like, you know, they have those sections, the Israeli sections with the Palestinians, and they won't let them pass, you know, so they have this kind of loop that they're in. And just like the Nazis had the ghettos in Poland. And I was always wondering, what was it about that control? You have to be just in this little area. And then seeing them doing it, they don't want that movement.
Right.
And now, I mean, something like this really answers that.
Well, but I think part of this is you now, with automation, you don't need a lot of people as labor, and you're trying to reduce the general population. You're trying to reduce their life expectancy, and you're trying to reduce their use of economic resources.
Right.
So you're
lower their numbers, right?
You're lowering their numbers. You're lowering their life expectancy, and you're lowering the amount of resources that they have access to. So essentially, you're reducing them to poverty.
Yeah.
Slowly.
Catherine, whether it's the going direct reset, the Internet of Things, the absurd Stepford Biden Build Back Better, you know, UN slogan, or the green passport, or even the continuity of government emergency planning, what is it that's being rolled out over the citizens at this point?
Well, here's the thing. Clearly, the goal of this is not the stated goal. And if you look at what the possible goals are, there's multiple possible goals. I would point out the latest statistics just announced that the life expectancy in the U.S. dropped last year, a whole year.
Oh, that's remarkable.
Right.
But Catherine, they will throw you off social networks for saying these things. So we're in a whole different paradigm than we were even a year or two ago.
Why are we even on social networks?
Yeah, right.
I mean, here's the thing. You know, there is a civilization, and you can be a member of that civilization. But if you don't want to share those values, then you can try and build something else.
Right. So it's the whole be in the world, but not of the world.
So I have no interest in whining about the fact that, you know, I can't post a video on YouTube.
Mm-hmm. I mean, but I do find it remarkable as a sea change. It's quite remarkable if you think about it, just from that point of view. I understand your point, though, which is larger in a sense. It says, you know what, I'm moving forward to do this thing, and social networks aren't going to get in my way.
Well, I would say it this way, which was in 2000, you know, we tried many, many things from, I started Salinger in 2008, and we tried many, many things from 2008 to 2014. And in 2014, I sat down and I said, you know, I've had it. We're going to take this down to a team of people who I believe have integrity. And we're going to try and do what we can do with people of integrity. And then it'll go where it goes, and it'll be what it'll be, and I have no idea. But I'm not going to try and play, you know, fly in the spider's web.
Right.
I'm just going to, you know, I'm going to get off the Titanic. I'm going to paddle out. I'm going to pick up some, you know, if there's any flotsam and jetsam floating around, I'm going to pick it up. I'm going to see what kind of arc I can make with a few people who want to do it. You know, and I'm just going to turtle forward. Because I don't want to be on the Titanic. I don't want to listen to the band. I don't want to shuffle the deck chairs around. I don't want to be a part of it. Whether it sails or sinks, I'm out.
Right.
Right. So.
Yeah, that's crucial.
Well, but you have to build, you know, don't worry about the other guy's conspiracy. Build one. Mm-hmm. Right?
Well, that's your motto.
Right.
You used to end all your shows like that, right?
Well, but here's the thing. I spent my whole life being a conspiracy generator, soldier, implementer. You know, I thought conspiracies were wonderful. We loved doing them. They were great. You know?
Yeah.
And when I was shocked to discover that people thought there was anything bad about conspiracies, like, what do you mean? Conspiracies are what we use to build our worlds. Well, why wouldn't we love them? Let's start one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all about where you're coming from. Incredible.
No, it's all about where you're going.
Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely. It's great to see you.
It's great to see you, Daniel.
Fantastic. Everyone has to get this Solari report, the free Solari Silver and Gold Calculator, available at Solari.
Yeah, and all the forms, the employees, school, parent forms, they're all free. Just yes. Come into the homepage. But I'll tell you, this is a doozy.
No question.
You should have John Titus on.
Yes, so, absolutely. Yeah,
you should get Titus on the Dark Journalist.
Mark Skidmore did an analysis.
Yes.
And his
Have you seen his latest?
I saw the 95
million. He just did another missing money update.
Yes.
Yeah, so you should have Skidmore on. He's rocking. He brought up his own blog, and it's called Lighthouse Economics. It's fabulous.
Oh, right.
Okay. I sent you that link. Yeah, yes. Very good coverage. So okay. Skidmore is rocking. Titus is rocking. You should get them both on.
I'll tell you, the thing that can dovetail and where we can use the establishment against itself is their big promotion of the UFO file right now. The missing trillions can come right in the middle of that discussion, right. And all those people can go, ooh, start talking about
yeah.
that.
And so, you know, I always tell people, they say, well, you can't get the money back. I said, yeah, but you can get a stock certificates in the UFOs.
Wow. Now you're talking. Why not?
That's yeah. that's our asset.
Yes.
Right?
It's UFO right. Inc.
Right. If you go back to the 2015 wrap up, there is a picture of a stock certificate spaceship of John Doe. John, you know.
That's right.
What is it, John Q. Citizen or something?
Yeah. I have so, it.
No,
right.
I was very clear, you know. That's our equity. We can, you know, you don't have to sell the UFO and give me the cash. I'll just take a stock certificate in the spaceship.
Now you're talking.
Yeah,
that
there
is
you go.
Incredible, though. Right. And we have a discussion, you and I, from 2015, the UFO economy, which lays out really a lot of this track. That's the interesting thing, which is when I say you were ahead of the curve on it, that's what's remarkable in the sense that you had the guts to talk about it also, considering you were, you know, between this world and the investment world.
Well, I don't know, because for a long time, I just tried to understand it. I was slower to talk about it than I would have liked to be, but I just, you know, if you're dealing with a subject where you don't have the intelligence you need to know what's really going on, you know, you have to build a framework for the unanswered questions. And it took me a long time because I used to hate diving into the topic. My tool is money. And that's a topic that doesn't lend itself to being mapped with money.
Yeah.
And you have to really go back way long in history. You have to deal with a lot of bizarre phenomena. It just took me a long, long time. And part of it was, if you look at the work that other researchers were doing and then publishing, you know, they were digging and framing and digging and framing and digging and framing. And so it took me a long time to get to the point where I felt I had a framework that was useful to share.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
It's valuable. No one had ever really tracked the money around it. Something that Jim Mars came up with, and he did one really good book on UFOs, but he understood some of the stranger dynamics, but he found an order deep in the archives of Truman saying, don't shoot at them anymore.
Right.
But that's significant, you know, those types of things. And it's that
right.
quality, that caliber of research. Unfortunately, around the UFO thing now, it's gone, like, talk about mind control. It's completely sick environment.
Well, you just mean because of the
TSA and Elizondo and Mellon and the media threat thing.
So let me go back. There's entertainment, there's news, and there's intelligence.
Right.
They're trying to keep it in the entertainment space.
Yes.
Okay. So Solari is intelligence. I mean, in Money and Markets, John and I will cover some news, but it's really, our focus is intelligence. You know, live a free and inspired life. It's the intelligence to live a free and inspired life. So my impression of you is you're interested in intelligence. You're also interested in history, which is part of intelligence.
Right.
But you're not particularly interested in entertainment. You don't mind being entertaining, but entertainment is not your beat.
Yes.
I think part of what they're doing with the UFO stuff is they're trying to keep it over here in entertainment.
Absolutely.
Right.
No question about it.
Right.
Yeah.
Did you ever go over, you know, Fidelity is in Boston. Did you ever go over to and ask them why they were financing the
Excellent point. Excellent points. Yeah. That's a question they should answer. I agree 100%.
Yeah, considering how many treasuries they hold as asset manager, I would be very interested to hear Fidelity explain why they were financing the blue chicken app.
Well, I'll tell you what's bad about the current CIA UFO disclosure one is that they have Marco Rubio as the central leader saying, I want UFO freedom, you know, free the files, I want the information. And knowing that it's at that level that they've gone into this kind of, like, you know.
I wonder why Rubio wants to be part of that.
It's an excellent question.
See what the trade was on that one.
And that's a really good point. I mean, he's there in Florida.
So there's a rule in hot dogs, a rule in politics, never let them take a picture of you eating a hot dog. Okay. So what Rubio is doing is the equivalent of getting a politician to let people take pictures of him eating a hot dog.
And interesting.
So yeah, I want to know what the trade was.
we'll get there for sure. Catherine, amazing. Well,
interesting thing. Just think of this.
Yeah.
Where does DeSantis get the backing to do what he's doing in Florida?
I want to know that too.
Right.
Yeah.
Because Because whoever that is, that's related to Rubio's doing this.
DeSanta has been really bucking the system completely.
Well, you know, if you're the mob, it's not good for business, this game. I mean, sure. If you're the central bankers and you can just print money, it's great for business. But if you're the mob and you got big assets and casinos and all these hotels, this is not good for business.
Yeah.
Yeah. The mob always liked the middle class. They make a lot of money on the middle class.
Right. That's the slice of the deep state that actually has a kind of patriotism.
Okay, no. Well, yeah. So they understand if you wreck the neighborhood, it's bad for business.
So, right. Yeah. But the black budget guys, you know.
Well, but here's the question, Daniel. This is the $64,000 question we've been going around and around and around. Who is Mr. Global and why is Mr. Global behaving this way?
Yes.
You know, think about it. We live on a planet where the governance system is a mystery, which is really frustrating because they're clearly changing it radically.
Yeah.
So we don't know, you know, we don't even know where we are now, let alone where they're taking it. So
wow.
I think it's time to turn on the lights. Let's just keep turning on the lights.
Catherine, it's great to see you.
Take care, Daniel. Have a great day.
Catherine, amazing information. Thank you. And we'll be using your new Cash Fridays as a way to push back. Of course, all your material is available at Solari.com. Parts 1 and 2 of this interview are available for you here at darkjournalist.com. Join us on Fridays at 8 p.m. Eastern for the X Series. See you soon.